Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people. And their essential love of justice.
Well, good evening. It's Sunday, April 15th. Time for another installment of the Kudzu Vine. This is Tim Shiflett coming at you from the mountains of Northwest Georgia. Now, normally at this time, I would introduce Catherine along with Keith McCants, who is guest hosting this week. I can look at the switchboard and see that they have called in. However, thanks to the wonder, shall we say, of modern technology, the switchboard is not operating tonight. It will not let me put anyone on the air. So for now, I am essentially sitting here talking to you out there and to myself. I'm going to work on this thing and try to get it going, but you folks tuned in to hear a show, and so I'm going to try to give you one while we work on this. Catherine, if you can hear me, please try to get on the switchboard yourself. In the meantime, I'm going to start tonight by talking to you folks out there about Florida. Representative Alan West had a town hall meeting the other day, and one of the questions concerned the presence of, shall we say, communists in Congress. And there was a nervous twitter in the audience when all of that was said. And Representative West, without batting an eye, told the questioner that he believes, quote, there are about 78 to 81 members of the Democratic Party that are members of the Communist Party. Now, this is not the first time this fella has said something that's totally off the wall. Last year, for instance, he said that the Democratic Party spin machine would have made Joseph Goebbels proud. And earlier this year, he said that the president and the Democrats needed to get their campaign message, quote, and get the hell out of the United States of America. It takes me back to the 1950s, there was a senator by the name of Joe McCarthy who essentially did the same thing, as you all know, and he did the same thing without proof, as you all know. And I just got to wonder what this guy is thinking. A lot of people's lives were ruined by Joe McCarthy. He never apologized for what he did, and it was a blot on our country's history when it happened. And if I go a little dark for a minute, folks, I am desperately trying to fix the switchboard so that we can have a show tonight. In a few minutes, David Wissing of the Hedgehog Report should be joining us. But everything that I'm doing, unfortunately, does not seem to be working. So I'm very sorry about this, folks. I really am. Hello, are you on with me?
Can you hear me?
I can hear you now, Catherine.
We are having
quite a bit of trouble tonight with our switchboard.
I've been calling in like every 2 minutes, thinking that if I just keep trying, and I couldn't get into the
the switchboard.
Because I
like
don't
I
have
said,
the password, so I need to fix that.
Yeah, but, like I said, the wonders of modern technology never cease to amaze me.
Fail.
So we'll just we will just essentially try to move along the best we can, and we're going to hope that Keith can get through to us in a minute. We are expecting David Whissing here to call in about 5 or 6 minutes. You still with me, Catherine?
Yep, I'm right here.
Okay, we're getting a lot of interference along to go along with everything else. But anyway, we got a show to do, so we're doing it. I was just talking about good old Alan West. Down there in Florida. I was wondering if you could give us your take on that gentleman and his railings.
Well, it's just sometimes shocking what people will do to get some attention. You know, accusing people of communism is so, so 1950s, like you said.
Yeah, really. Keith, are you with us, sir? Keith, are you there?
Yes, Tim, it's me. Yeah, it's me.
Oh, yay.
Yay. Well, as you probably heard if you were listening to the show, we were having, like, major difficulties with the good old switchboard.
Yeah.
Talk radio here. And at least we're going. Catherine, go ahead and finish your thought on our friend, the congressman from Florida.
Well, I just, you know, you just wonder what, in the current situation with the economy and joblessness and the, you know, divisiveness of the political scene, is this really helpful in any way? What is the point?
What is the point, Keith? What was Alan West trying to do by saying that there are 78 to 81 communists in the Democratic Party in the U.S. Congress?
I don't know what Mr. West is trying to accomplish here by suggesting that Democrats, 75 to 80 Democrats, are communists. Now, to me, it seems like what he's trying to do is he's trying to make a play for his base, number one. And then, number two, it appears that he is also trying to make a play at the number two plot for the vice presidency with Mitt Romney. That's just my opinion. But I have no idea what Alan West, to tell you the truth, I don't understand how could somebody like that get elected in the first place, number one. I just can't see how. Mr. West, he came in without a fanfare. He's popular amongst his base. But as you're about to see right now, these off-the-cuff comments does not help him nor his party, and it proves that how far the GOP has moved to the right over the past 2 years. So it's just something that I just hit my head at and I just ignore.
Well, you mentioned something interesting because about a week ago, Sarah Palin, among other people, was touting this guy as a running mate. Think outside the box, she said, yeah. Boy, that is an understatement of the year. Wouldn't you seriously say this man has ruined any chances, at least for now, that he has for national office?
Oh, I would never say that, Tim. I would never say that.
Really?
No.
You surely wouldn't think Mitt Romney would pick them, though, would you?
I think there could be. I mean, I think it's. I just am always cautious to say never with in politics, because who would have thought that Sarah Palin would have been a legitimate vice presidential candidate?
Well, we can talk about that word legitimate.
Well, yeah, but I mean, she was on the ticket. She was well received by many, many, many people, and they still, you know, have a lot of admiration for her.
Keith, don't you think that the Republicans learned a valuable lesson in 08? That is, take more than 5 days to vet your prospective vice presidential candidates, because they, you know, might botch an interview with Katie Couric or, oh, gee.
I don't think so. I don't think they learned that lesson from 2008. Alan West is he's not your typical politician. He is someone, if they want to, how can I put this, if they want to galvanize their base or bring their base together, putting him on the ticket would do that. But on the other hand, if they do that, then what that does is galvanize the Democratic base. And it'll galvanize the African American base, especially in states like Florida. Can Alan West bring a state like Florida to Mitt Romney in the GOP 2012? I say no. So to me, go ahead and put him on the ticket. You put him on the ticket, that would, without a shadow of a doubt, would help President Obama win re-election in November. So I hope they put him on the ticket, because it'll show that you got what I call a fake as a GOP nominee in Mitt Romney. He's a fake. I just call it like a bit. He's a fake. He's here one day. He's here the next day. He's here 2 years ago. Now he's here today. And now you got a far-right neoconservative as number two. I hope they put him on the ticket, because that would ensure President Obama's re-election. So go right ahead. I'm not going to – I'm going to stay in the way of it. So go right ahead.
Okay. And we will stop on that point right there and come back to that subject a little later, because I believe at this time our guest for this evening has joined us, David Wissing of the Hedgehog Report out of the great state of Maryland. Welcome to you, David.
Oh, glad to be here, Tim. Thanks for inviting me back.
Oh, yeah, great to talk to you again. You've been on with us before, so we won't need to ask you to give us any biographical information. By the way, I would like to, now that I'm talking to you personally, congratulate you on one little update to your biography, and that is your recent marriage. So congratulations to you, sir.
Well, thank you. It's actually been about a year now. It was actually last...
It's been that long, huh?
Yep,
I didn't realize it's been that long.
Yeah, it's March, so it's been a year since last March, so. But
boy,
I appreciate
the
time that.
Flies.
Thank you. It does.
So let's jump right into it.
Right.
Even though Maryland is a blue state, you have
a little bit
within your it's just as blue as Georgia is red. Let's put it that way. Even though Maryland is a blue state, you do have there maybe one of the hottest House races in the country this year, involving a longtime GOP congressman. Why don't you give our listeners the particular of that race as it now stands?
Well, it's the 6th Congressional District. It was Roscoe Bartlett, who's been in Congress for some people would say forever, but he's been there for quite a while. I think he's in his 80s now. In this last round of redistricting, they actually, the Democrats, and they had complete control of the governor's seat in both houses of the assembly, and basically redrew that district. Basically took out, I think it was probably 60% Republican or pretty close to that, and it's now about 57% supported Obama with the new line. So the Democrats made a concerted effort to, I guess, take Bartlett out, and right now that's kind of where it stands there. I think actually the interesting part's on the primary level. Bartlett won his primary on the Republican side pretty easily. He had some respectable challengers, but he did win about, I think, 45% of the vote in the primary. But on the Democratic side, what was interesting is when they redrew the district, there was a state senator, the majority leader. They basically, all the pundits believe they basically drew the district for him, so he would, you know, leave the state Senate and run for Congress. And along the way, at the time, a political unknown by the name of John Delaney actually jumped in, outspent the majority leader by, I think, 3-1, I think it was, and ended up beating, I guess, the Democratic Party's favored candidate.
Delaney is very wealthy and self-financing, is that right?
Yeah, he dumped a lot of his own money into the race, almost close to $2 million, I believe, when it was all said and done. What was interesting is basically the entire Governor O'Malley, the Senate President, Speaker of the House, all Democrats, and a lot of the party higher-ups all supported the state Senate Majority Leader, Robert Garagiola. But Delaney basically just outspent him, like I said, about 3-1. He did get the endorsement of Bill Clinton, which I think put his name on the map initially, and then Washington Post endorsed him, and he ended up winning by a pretty healthy margin. In fact, the most humorous part was after Delaney won, the state Senate president, he was so mad about it, he asked to see Delaney's tax returns, which was,
You mentioned on the Republican side that Representative Bartlett got 45% of the vote. That seems a bit low for an incumbent in a primary.
Yeah, it was.
What was the dynamic?
Well, there was, upwards of 7 or 8 candidates running, a couple state senators in Maryland and delegates who had some name recognition. And because the district was redrawn so dramatically, the state senators had some, had their own base of support that came out for him. Yeah, I agree, 45% or maybe even 43% is pretty low for an incumbent. But I think his nearest challenger only got about 15 or 16%, if I remember. So I think the vote just got split so many different ways.
Would you say this is one of those races that the national parties are looking at, especially the Democrats, that they would target this race as one that they would have to win if they harbor any hopes at all of recapturing the House?
Yeah, I think they're expecting to win it just because of the new demographics of the district. Like I said, I think they did calculation. I think it was 57% of the current district now actually supported Obama in 2008. So they really changed this district into the Democrats' favor. So, yeah, if they don't win this district, I can't see them winning a majority nationwide, because this is one I think they fully expect to win. I haven't looked at any of the prognosticators on what they, where they're pegging this race, but I would actually say it starts out as a lean Dem or at least slightly in their favor right off the bat.
Yep.
There's been no polls that I've seen.
Yeah, so you know Maryland politics. You've batted around it for quite a while. Your best guess on election night, does the 6th district flip?
If I were to say right now, I would say yes, unless, the Republicans can kind of make a comeback here, nationwide. So I think it'll go along with whatever direction the nation goes, that'll be which way that district goes. But I think the Democrats definitely have the edge, and right now I would expect them to win it.
David, also on with us is Catherine Smith and Keith McCants, and I'm going to pass it over to them for some questions about Maryland and about national politics, and we'll just start with Catherine.
Hey, thanks a lot for being on tonight. How's the weather in Maryland today?
It was actually a little warm.
Yeah,
I went out earlier.
It was warm in Atlanta, too. I think this is very interesting about Delaney. So the Democratic Party and the sort of influencers, I guess you might call them, were supporting a different candidate, but this guy won in the primary, correct?
Yeah.
So what does that indicate about the sort of influence and power of your Democratic Party?
Well, the Senate president, he's been there. God, he's got it going on 30 years now, Senate president, and the speaker's got 10 years. I think a lot of it was, to be honest, Delaney, he was an attractive candidate. He was a businessman here in Maryland. And, I think a lot of it was he just flat out outspent. I think I even read an article that said Gary Joel didn't even place a single television ad on TV, which, I'm not even in his district, and I saw ads for Delaney. I mean, he was advertising everywhere, and it was, I really do think when Bill Clinton endorsed him, a lot of Democrats said, oh, I wonder who this guy is, and decided to take a look. And I think it happens in both parties, and voters were like, well, we shouldn't be told who we're supposed to endorse and or supposed to support, and they took a look at him, and in some cases, they were probably only, Delaney was the only guy they actually saw, so... just because of the overwhelming campaign. So, they've all lined up behind him. I think the state senator even lined up behind him. So I don't think there's any ill will per se, but I think it was just a case where voters didn't want to be told who they were supposed to support.
It may also be a reflection of the change in the when they rewrote that district, that it became a little bit of a different kind of animal?
It could be some of it when they redrew those districts originally, that was the first thing everybody said was, oh, this was drawn for this state Senate majority leader. And that's the first thing everybody heard when these districts got redrawn. That could have rubbed a lot of people the wrong way. So,
well, that's really interesting. Sort of be careful what you wish for,
Right.
Are there any other, how is, you're sort of on the opposite side of Georgia as far as, redistricting. You're like the flip of us. Like, they've redistricted, Atlanta is always been a bright blue dot in the middle of a relatively red state. And in order to eliminate some of that Democratic power in redistricting, they drew a bunch of districts with just a little bit in the Fulton County and Atlanta proper so that they could have more influence in the Fulton delegation. Did the Democrats do things like that Maryland?
I still say Maryland has some of the worst districts. If you look at the shapes of them,
up a map. Ours are like ribbon.
We probably have similar, just in opposite parties. But what the Democrats did this time is, Andy Harris, he went out on District 1, which is out on the what we call the Eastern Shore of Maryland, and they actually made his district more red. They just pushed more of the Republicans into that district, and so they could. Right now, the delegation is 6-2 Democrats. So, going after the 6th district, they're trying to get a 7-1 edge overall. So, the Democrats have done a masterful job in redrawing district lines. In fact, if you go back, before 2002, it was a 4-4 split, and they've managed to get to 6-2 and may have gotten a 7-1 here with this latest redraw. So, it happens both ways,
just
unfortunately.
Further evidence for the need for some nonpartisan district mapping, at least in my opinion. Even as a strong Democrat, I just think that this is getting a little bit ridiculous.
I just don't know how we ever get there, because the guys who have to change it are the ones who are in power, and the ones that are in power don't want to give up that power.
Amen.
Well, I'm going to turn this over to Keith now to ask you some questions. Thanks a lot.
Okay.
All right, thank you, Catherine. Hey, Dave, how you doing?
Good.
Yes, I want to ask you a question about this case down in Florida, the Trayvon Martin case. This started out as a local issue, and now it has blossomed to a national and political issue. Having said that, how do you see this case affecting President Obama's chance? I mean, the president. How does this affect his chances of win in Florida. Do you see this case somehow? I hate to put it like that, but do you see this case as a possible, could it help the president in a way down in Florida? Because, as you know, it is essential for him if he wants to get reelected in November. So do you think this case could in some way help the president instead of hurt him?
I don't know if it would either way, to be honest. I mean, I don't know a lot about what goes on down in Florida. You know, and with some people, it might help them. With other people who think this is, who believe in the stand the ground law, it might reinforce their opposition. I don't know. It's hard to. I really can't answer that. I don't think I know enough about Florida, in the makeup down there and how people would, how that's going to change your mind. My guess is it's not going to have too much of an impact long term. I think it'll be interesting because now this is going to trial. You know, a lot of it's going to depend on, I guess, when this trial actually occurs, it might bring up, it might come back around again. But I don't know. A lot of times we have these incidents that spark national fervor, and then everybody's like, oh, how is this going to affect something? And fortunately or unfortunately, depending on your view, months later, it's kind of faded to the background. So I think there's a lot of other stuff that's going to affect the election. So
yeah,
I know
it's
kind of evading the question, but I don't know. I've seen it happen before, and where you think it's going to be a big issue, then it never turns out to be. So.
Oh, okay. Yes, yes. So it is a tough issue, and I've been hearing people say, well, this could help President Obama, or it could hurt President Obama, it could hurt fringe groups who want to come in and who want to affect 2012 race down in Florida. I'm like you. It's a hard call because I've been asking that question, and I couldn't give an answer neither. I would say, well, who knows? I say, well, who knows? Or I don't know. We have to see. I just say, well, just let things play out, and then we'll just see how that goes. I'm just like you. So, but I do want to pitch off to another question here before I turn back over to Tim. Alan West, and we just got him talking about this before you came on. He's being pushed as a possible vice presidential candidate to Mitt Romney. I just laughed at that because I just say, well, bring it on. You want to put him on the ticket with Mitt Romney, then bring it on. So what do you think about the possibility of a Romney-West ticket against an Obama-Biden ticket?
I don't see that happening, and if it was, I think it would be good for Obama, if you ask me, but I just don't see that happening. I have a feeling Romney's going to play it a little bit safer this time than McCain did 4 years ago, and he's probably going to pick somebody with experience and first-term congressman. I just don't see that as a choice for Romney. In fact, a lot of people think Rubio is going to be. I don't even see Rubio. I mean, he's in his first term of the Senate. I just see him picking somebody a little bit more established,
I do. I do too. It's just something that if he wants to think outside the box, like Sarah Palin suggesting, someone like Alan West would be a ideal candidate. But like you said, and I said this earlier, that you put Alan West on the ticket with Mitt Romney. They will help President Obama in November. No question about it. Well, that's all the questions I have for you, David. I'm going to come back over to Tim, and I thank you for your answer.
All right. All right, then. Dave, you got a couple of interesting ballot initiatives up there this year, and I was wanting to ask you about them and how they stand and how the voters are viewing them. And the first one I wanted to ask you about was the DREAM Act.
Mm-hmm.
Where does that stand now with the voters in Maryland?
Well, that passed the legislature and was actually signed, I'm going to say it was back in either February or early March. But essentially, the day it was signed, a petition drive started to bring it to referendum, and I don't even remember what the threshold is, but they cleared the threshold by almost double whatever was required, and so that will be on the ballot in November, the same day as the general election. I think, or voter state, there hasn't been a lot of polling on it. I think I've seen two different polls. They're both by a local firm here, Gonzalez Research. And in both polls, it was essentially like a 48-48 split, you know,
mm-hmm.
with a few undecideds. And those polls are probably from back in, I'm going to say, January, February. So I see that
it surprises me a little bit that this seems to be such a hot-button issue there because of Maryland's geographical location. It's a mid-Atlantic state. Is immigration a big issue in Maryland?
It is for some people. I think one of the things in Maryland is, I've seen articles about this, where it is very friendly to don't want to say illegal immigrants coming in. They, probably a lot more lenient than you see in a lot of other states. And so I think that's where the hot button portion of the issue comes, because a lot of people are opposed to some of those measures. So it becomes I think that's why I got on the ballot so easily. There's a lot of fervor to strike down the Dream Act, and it's a hot button issue. So
and right hand in hand with it, you're looking at another one, and that is same sex marriage.
Yes,
which suddenly, after years of lying dormant, seems to be clicking and passing in state after state after state, and those that aren't passing it are passing civil unions. So what's the status of that there?
Well, that it was interesting on that bill. It was last year's assembly, Maryland only meets for 3 months a year at the beginning of the year. So 2011, the bill came up, and a lot of people thought Governor O'Malley didn't really push it as hard as he should have, and it actually died in actually never came up for an actual vote, so it just kind of died without ever being voted on. So it was brought back up again this year. Governor O'Malley actually got behind the bill this time, and it still struggled to get passed. But what happened was it was getting towards the final vote, and they didn't have the votes, and so I think an amendment was put in to delay the implementation until January of 2013. And the whole purpose of that amendment was so that it would go to referendum. Everybody expected it to go to referendum. So once they put in this, delayed implementation of it, it essentially said, okay, it's passed, but this is going to go to referendum. So we'll let it go to referendum before we implement it. So it did get passed. It was signed. And then that is currently being worked on the petition level. It has actually not been officially passed. They haven't got all the signatures yet, so that's in the process now.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be honest, I don't know when the deadline is off the top of my head, but everybody expects it to be put on the ballot, and so that'll be a second issue that's going to be voted on.
Has there been any polling on it that you know?
Interesting about that, it's similar to the Dream Act. It's split. I think there's actually been a few polls. I would say Public Policy Polling did one. I think actually showed about an 8-point edge in favor of same-sex marriage, but there's been a couple others by Gonzalez, had it roughly split, maybe slightly in favor of it, and then another local firm, Opinion Works, had one where it was probably slightly opposed to it. So, again, I think that's going to be another issue that it's hard for me to predict how it's going to come out in the end. But it's interesting for that one. You think it's a partisan issue, but that's when actually it kind of belies the partisan, because there's actually a fair number of Republicans who are actually in favor of it, but there's also a pretty large contingent of Democrats, and they actually tend to be African-Americans who are actually opposed to same-sex marriage. So, so it'll be interesting to see where that ends up here. Obviously, the governor supports it. So that'll be interesting. A lot of it's going to depend on who shows up in November on that one. So
yeah.
I think if you have a high African-American turnout, it might actually go down. And that's what a lot of people are saying right here. So it seems counterintuitive, but if you looked in California, that's a lot of people think what happened in California.
So
it's
interesting.
If you look at the internals of these polls, African Americans are split on the issue. So
So before we close this thing out, I'm going to turn it back to Catherine and Keith and ask if they have any more questions about Maryland, the Maryland Republican Party, the presidential race, or anything. Catherine?
Okay, here I am back again. Tell me about the Republican Party in Maryland. Is it pretty strong? Is it well-funded? Is it, thriving, or is it struggling? Like,
struggling would be a kind word for it, I think. It's let's just say the Republicans don't have a lot of power. I mean, we're outnumbered in both legislatures by, it's got to be 3-1 at this point. And it's, for those who don't know who are listening, I am an elected member of their state central committee, but we struggle to raise money. And unfortunately, because we lack a lot of power, it's hard to convince people to give them money.
I can totally relate, because we're in the same situation as the Democrats in Georgia. So
they're struggling for their identity. Just like, we have our state convention coming up at the end of April, and the big thing there is we got a couple of races for National Committee Man and National Committee Woman. So they're the representatives to the national party, and we got as you hear in the news every day, the battle between the establishment and the Tea Party, and we'll see what comes out ahead. So we do what we can do, and we try to focus
on
where we can.
That's all you can do. Unfortunately, we can't do any more than we can do.
Yeah.
I sometimes wish I could.
And we got a Republican governor a few years ago, and it was like the greatest thing, And then he's gone 4 years later. So,
Keith, have you got another question for David?
No, I don't. I don't have any more questions for David.
Well, I do. It is one of the worst secrets in the world that I blog on your blog, David. And I noticed that your blog is just a touch different from other blogs, especially during presidential election years. Generally, in the blogosphere, like kinds travel together. That's not necessarily true on your blog. What would be the split, you would say, of this type or that type of voter on your blog in a typical presidential year?
In the presidential year? I mean, and Tim, you're there all the time, so
right.
You do yeoman's work pushing back. But, I want to say we're probably at about 20-25%, on the Democratic side on the website. What's interesting, this presidential year, I decided to jump 2 feet in. I was a Romney backer from the beginning, and
right.
And my website tended
to. You caused some grief on your own side about that, as I recall.
But it's so I probably chased a few people away too. But it's it's been fun actually. I've enjoyed it. I think I don't jump into the comments as much as sometimes I would like, but it's.
Uh-huh.
It's fun reading it, I will say. And like I said, Tim, you do, I don't know how you do it, but the way they dump on you pretty good, but you tend to fight back pretty good too. So.
Oh yeah. Well, it's a lot of fun. They don't realize that I'm having fun when I do it, but as far as the presidential race itself goes, now
right.
We've got our nominees set. Where do you see this race right now? Nationally,
I think Obama still is slightly favored. But I think, you know, as they say, I hate to use that term, the Estes sketch movement, but, you know, I think everything basically restart the race at this point, and I think it's going to be I think, like I said, I think Obama starts slightly ahead. I think he's got more states in his back pocket that he doesn't have to worry about. I think, you know, Romney's got to win back some of these states. It's just the way the math is, and so I think there's certain states that if he doesn't win, there's no chance that he's ever going to win this race. You know, states like North Carolina, Virginia, he's got to get those back into the Republican column. But
and then
you look at Florida and Ohio, and that's where it's going to happen.
Yeah, and you're right next door to Virginia, which will not only feature the presidential race, but one of the hottest Senate races in the country. So as far as your posters on that site, there'll be a whole lot of talk about Virginia just right across the line from you there, won't there?
Yeah, there will be. I haven't really picked the nominees yet, I don't believe, but everybody thinks it's going to be George Allen, who used to be the U.S. Senator, until he opened his mouth too much, and then Tim Kaine, who's the former DNC chair. So that I think that will be
a nail biter. That's going to be a nail biter.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
We're going to be up late watching those returns.
I don't think anybody can predict how that one's going to end up at this moment. So
now there's one more thing, David. Before I let you go, for anyone out there today that likes what they hear from you, some of our listeners, and would like to check your political work out further, how can they find you on the World Wide Web?
You just go to hedgehogreport.com, and like I said, it's a lively site. You know, I always tell you, don't be afraid to jump in, but you got to be prepared to take it. So,
when you get there.
Yeah, you'll find Tim there. So, he'll back you up.
You also do a blog on local politics up there as well, don't you?
I do. It's on the if you're familiar with the patch.com online newspaper. I do have I would say irregular column that I write there because I'm not doing it as often as I can. But it's Columbia, which is actually where I live in Maryland. Columbia.patch.com. So you can. I think there's probably columns of mine up there right now. But I try that tends to be more local focused.
Mr. Wissing, as usual, we'd love to thank you for being with us again on the Kudzu Vine. And we hope that I started to play the Hedgehog Report, but I'll be there after a while. And we hope that as the campaign unfolds, perhaps you can be on with us again to give us some of your expertise about what's going on in the Mid-Atlantic region of the country.
Oh, I'd be glad to. I appreciate you inviting me back. You probably don't get too many Republicans on your site, but
we get quite a few, believe it or not. we thank you for being with us tonight, Dave.
Of course.
Thanks a lot, right. David.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Bye.
Okay, David Wissing of the Hedgehog Report. Moving on to another timely topic concerning Georgia. Don't laugh on this, Catherine, but we've given a lot of airtime to Herman Cain on this show. I knew it was coming. Of course, he is from Georgia. That's one reason we did it. And the other reason, I think, is, some of the things he does are just a little bit on the strange side. This group he has, this sickofstimulus.com, has this new ad out. Did you both see it?
Yeah, I saw that ad.
I started to look at it, and then I think I just got disgusted. But go ahead and talk about it. I'll look at it.
Okay, it shows a farmer essentially getting pecked to death by chickens in a barnyard who are supposed to represent big government. And there's this spooky little girl there at the end asking any questions. I think she's been on some more of his ads. Catherine, what is he doing?
I don't know. The man is kind of crazy. And, you know, we talked about the other two ads. I guess it was either last week or the week before. I don't understand what the purpose is. Like, what? It's like, is he, like, all of a sudden into avant-garde film or something? Like, avant-garde political messaging? Or, I mean, it's all such weird angles on things. I just don't understand what drives him. I really don't.
Yeah, Keith, by any account, this video is a bit out in bizarre world. Even if valid points are being made here, is the message being lost in the way these things are presented?
Yes. I'm looking at it right now. I see the girl standing over the farmer. He's been pit to death. And the only thing that's left on him is a half a skeleton with the clothes still on. And I don't understand what message it is supposed to send. It's really ridiculous if you ask me. I really don't know. Like I'm with you, Tim. The message, if you're trying to see the message, it's getting lost in the film, because I see a farmer here, he feeding them feed, and all of a sudden all the chickens start to fly, they pick him to death, he falls to the ground, like right now. he's screaming, he dropped the pail, don't know what to do. I really don't understand what the whole purpose of this ad here. He's running, he ran into the screen, he's on the ground now, he's screaming, they pick him to death, he can't get up. Then it stops looking at him, and then he's screaming again. And then he's being pinched to death, being pinched to death. And then that thing, you know, you got a little girl coming out here, and she looks at him. And all thing I see now is bone. They pick at his bone, and I really don't understand what the sole purpose of this ad is supposed to be. It's just, I don't get it. I really don't get it.
We're all agreed on that point.
Tim, you guys remember in 2008? That guy, what was his name? Mike Grave. Oh, what was his name? He did that video. He was running as a Democrat. He did that. I think as a Democrat, he did that video where he walked around a lake, and then he threw a rock in the lake.
Yeah.
It's like that. It's like, what does this mean?
Every person's got to think that, too. You know, what in the world? How could the average person look at that Herman Cain video and do anything except scratch their heads, right?
Right.
Like I said, I think he's got some special grant to do avant-garde film. Avant-garde political film.
Well, while we're in Georgia, and while we got you on, Keith, let's move from the universe of the weird into some more mainstream Georgia politics.
And I do really want to discuss this while you're on here, Keith, because you are from the region of the state that we'd like to talk about right now. You know Middle and South Georgia politics, so I was wondering,
just what is the state of politics in your region
of the state?
Is it as one-sided, for instance, as it would be up here?
Well, the perception is that it is one-sided, but it's really not. I know a couple of bills that was passed during this year's session has really caught the ire of many citizens down here. For example, the charter school bill. And there's a lot of school boards, namely mine, here in Macon County, that are staunchly opposed to such a bill because they said that it takes away all their power. And if the state will come in, they'll decide whether or not a charter school should or should not be built. Now, just like here in Macon County and elsewhere throughout Middle South Georgia, these school boards, they want to decide what's best for their communities and for these kids. That's an issue right there. If Democrats were smart, and I know they are, they would run on this issue down here in rural Georgia, because if, believe it or not, this issue was looked at as a Metro Atlanta issue. Now, I have not looked into that. It may be just a Metro Atlanta issue. But down here, you got many counties down here who do have two schools, either a public or private school. So what's the use of another school, a charter school? What would that accomplish? It really got everybody here scratching their heads, because they're like, well, what's going on? Why do we need this extra school where we got a option here, public or private school? And you got the illegal immigration bill. Although it passed during the last session, the last year, farmers here have lost millions and millions of dollars because of the lack of migrant workers. They tried to use prisoners down here, prisoners from the jail, the prisons, to go out here and do the work that migrants used to do, but that was a complete flop. It was a flop. And down here right now, there are many people who want down here in middle of South Georgia. It's just a matter of who's doing the recruitment of trying to find these candidates to run in these districts. Now, for instance, down here in 139, that's Mike Chioka's district. He's Republican. He switched parties, Democrats and Republicans. There are four known candidates that I know of that are looking at this race. Their main concern, what they talk with me, is about the state Democratic Party, which I saw about the finances and things like that. Well, that's not really the sole issue about the finances. They just want to know, are they on sound footing? Do they have a solid plan in place? Will they help them? And that's what they want. And a lot of these candidates, they want to run. It's just a matter of will they get the support from Atlanta, because they all feel like, and I talk with them. I talk to at least 20-25 at least a week. And they all come to me, they say, well, Keith, I just wonder, can I get the help from them? I could win this race. I could win this race. Some of them, they did it themselves on their own campaigns. And, you know, they really don't want any money. They just want some kind of support, grassroots, candidates, and things like that. And I told them, I said, well, this is what it's supposed to do. And, yes, they will help, but they're very skeptical about that. And I think a lot of them right now are in a holding pattern until they see how things look between now and qualifying, which is March, I think, 25th or 26th. So
okay.
Go ahead, Jim.
I was just going to say, I wanted Catherine to jump in here, too, while you're talking about that particular subject of candidate recruitment, because, Catherine, you and I have talked about the state party's anemic recruiting, especially in Keith's region of the state. So what do you guys think is the problem?
Well, I'll tell you what I think. I mean, I have a little bit different perspective on some of these things. You know, the party has never really been there to help candidates financially, except in very specific areas where they are very optimistic about winning. I'm not saying that that's the right strategy, but that's really the way it's been, at least as long as I've been involved, which is about 8 years. And, you know, of course, prior to that, it was all Democrats anyway, so, you know, it didn't really matter.
Go ahead, Catherine.
But I do think that there should be some, I'm talking about specifically about finances, you know, like I don't think any candidate should really expect the Democratic Party of Georgia or the House Caucus or the House Senate Caucus, the House Caucus or the Senate Caucus to pour a bunch of money in. However, I do think that if a potential candidate or a candidate decides to qualify, you know, reviews their own personal circle of friends, family, church, work, and sees a path where they can raise a significant, well, not a significant, an appropriate amount of money to run a legitimate race. If they can accomplish that, then I do think that either the House or Senate caucus or both and the DPG should be able to support them in other ways, whether it's, you know, getting Leader Abrams or Leader Henson to come down and, if that would help them, come down and, you know, do a mixer or do a, you know, meet and greet with the candidate, or, you know, have some volunteers or interns come down and do some canvassing or phone banking, or even get, you know, people around the state to do phone banking, which is possible now with you know, technology. So I don't think we really can expect the party to provide financial support. But I do think there should be some sort of other support that when a candidate has shown that they have, you know, a legitimate race in their, you know, a legitimate race ahead of them, that there should be some help from the party.
Keith, are some of these races that you were talking about winnable?
Yes, they are. I can name a few just right quick. You got House District 151. That's the seat not held by Gerald Green, which Bob Hanna, he's retired after 30-plus years in the House. That's one seat. You got another seat up here that's Bubba Epps, that's down here in around Macon area, Tweeds County. That's another district. The district has changed now. It has Cochran. That's where Middle Georgia College is located. But other than that, it's still the same as it was before. Then you also have a guy. There's a guy down the Battle of the named Cunningham, J.C. Cunningham. He's running against Amy Carter. She's the floor leader. I got the districts mixed up. I thought he's running in the new open district, 177, but it turns out he's running in House District 175. He's challenging Amy Carter. Now, that's a prime example right there of someone who made the decision on his own to run for a seat. The way it looks, it's winnable, but the problem here is you got Thomas County in there, and Thomas County is a staunchly Republican area. So those are the few races. There are more out here, like 155 and Jay Roberts down in Osceola, Irwin County. You got 171, Jay Roberts, Jay Powell down in Camilla. Then you also have Quentin Howell, 151. I hope Quentin runs again, but that's a race that's very wonderful. Quentin, he ran last time, but his problem was that he didn't get enough African-American support to turn out and vote for him. Had he had that, then he would be state representative right now instead of the rest of the kids. So a lot of these races here are winnable. A lot of these races are not winnable, but the ones that are either swing districts or lean Democratic are the ones that the party should take a keen interest into trying to assist candidates. Like here, before we get off here, where I'm at, there's a race here, 139. It's Macon County, Dewey County, Peace County, Dillon County. The three candidates running, one of these candidates is a conservative Democrat. And I'm biased here because I'm this campaign manager. They put on Poop out of Montezuma. He's a businessman. And I'm running his campaign, so I'm biased here. But this is a race here where you got a conservative Democrat versus two progressives. And some have told me that if Tom Cougar wins this race, then they will send a signal that, yes, conservative Democrats can still win in Georgia. But the district is a heavy Democratic district. It's 56% African-American. You throw in the Hispanic population, it's 62%. So having said that, this is a seat here where Cougar can win this seat, although it's a conservative Democrat. And I just like to see, you know, it's just not me here, but these candidates that I talk with, it's not about, yeah, some of them is about the money, but a lot of them, like I said before, they're willing to self-finance their own races, but they just want to have a little bit of shit from the state Democratic Party and the House talk. So, yeah, a lot of these races are vulnerable. Some of them are not that vulnerable.
Well, believe it or not, guys, our time is up. It flew in a hurry once we finally all got on the air. But Keith, seriously, I would like to thank you for sitting in with us tonight. It's always great to have you on. You've been on with us several times, and you're always so full of facts and figures and great knowledge about Middle and South Georgia, and we certainly hope you come back, because you are always welcome in this house.
Hey, I appreciate it, Ken. It's been a long time since I've been on here. I thought y'all forgot about me, because
I still check you out on Facebook. But anyway, that's the Kudzu Vine for April the 15th. We'd like to thank David Wissing for being on with us, and Catherine and I, and I guess David will be back next week, and we'll talk to you then. Good night, guys.
Good night, everybody.
Good night. All right.